based upon my experience, as Anthony said, as a former federal prosecutor, Navy JAG attorney, criminal defense attorney in the Navy, and then as a judge, a trial court judge in a pretty conservative county in Orange, it just became apparent to me that what we were doing with regard to our nation's drug policy simply was not working. So as Anthony said, I did something very unusual for a sitting trial court judge, and that is I held a press conference, I don't know of any other judge that's done this, stating my views that in effect we've got to change away from this failed policy because it just isn't working. Thereafter, and that was in April the 8th of 1992, so it's been, my goodness, a long time, 32-something years. Since that time, I've changed my mind. No, I now say, when I talk to Rotary clubs, religious groups, or any other groups, that drug prohibition is the biggest failed policy in the history of the United States of America, second only to slavery. And it is. And I'm going to disagree with Alex. There's no such thing as a lowly activist. It's incumbent on us all as citizens of our country to do at least three things. One is to pay our taxes within reason. Another is to not be a voter, but to be an intelligent voter. Look into the issues and be a knowledgeable voter, which is really important. And the third is to make the system work. Look, folks, it's our government, and if it's not working, it's our responsibility to make it better. And so there's no such thing as a lowly activist. You need to stand up for what you believe is right in whatever area that you are interested in. So as you can imagine, and I've been speaking about this publicly for quite a while, some of the introductions I've received are a lot less glamorous than the one you heard here from Anthony. I remember one in particular early on that was quite a bit shorter, and I can actually recite it verbatim. And it was, I know you all want to hear the latest dope from the courthouse, so here's Judge Gray. But now people are beginning to understand from a variety of ways. I talk to Rotary clubs or religious political groups, whatever now, and say, look, don't listen to what I say. Forget about my experience. Use your own. In fact, tell me in your questions an area that is of interest to you, close to your heart, and I will show you to your satisfaction how it is made worse because of our nation's policy of drug prohibition. And it could be medicinal, it can be educational, it can be healthcare, it can be the environment, criminal justice issues, whatever it is, it's made worse because of drug prohibition. Today, the biggest oxymoron in our world is the term controlled substances. Why? Because as soon as you prohibit something, you give up all of your control to the bad guys. Anything dealing with quality control, which is a huge issue, or place of sale, or price, or age restrictions, you give it up to the bad guys. So I'll tell you my journey. I started just collecting articles, just thinking about this, watching in my own courtroom how we are churning low-level drug offenders through the system for no good purpose whatsoever. You could arrest and even convict a big-time seller of cocaine or whatever in Santa Monica, Costa Mesa, wherever. And does that mean that now cocaine is no longer available? No, it's just an employment opportunity for someone else. So you then look at it really closely and see that we couldn't do it worse if we tried. Because yes, the drugs can be harmful, without question. However, the bigger problem is drug money. The drug money is killing people off in Colombia. In fact, I sat on a plane next to a young lady who came here from Colombia at an early age. And look what it's done to her country. Look what it's done to Mexico. You know, you have these beheadings, for heaven's sakes, and this corruption has nothing to do with drugs whatsoever. It's all drug money that does this. So you get people to begin to understand. I am here to give you a prognostication, a forecast. And that is, in the state of California, we will have on the ballot in 2016 an initiative to regulate and control the sale of recreational marijuana. It's going to happen. And if we do our job anywhere close to right, it's going to pass. It will be a watershed. At that point, I believe that marijuana prohibition virtually nationwide will be over because the federal government will not be able to internalize the loss of the state of California. And then let's go to the answer. And what, you don't find the answer very often in the world, but the answer is the concept of federalism. I go and talk again with people and say, hey, how many people here feel the federal government has all the answers? You don't have anybody raising their hands. So how many people, do you believe that as adults in the state of Oregon, that you have the ability best to protect and serve your people here with regard to the issue of drugs and drug prohibition and drug regulation? And they all say yes. So in fact, if Oregon comes up with something that works pretty well and the neighboring state of Idaho comes up with something that doesn't, they might look around and say, well, you know, what we're doing, Charlie, isn't working very, but look what they're doing in Oregon. That works pretty well. Let's gravitate over toward that. Because it's important to try different concepts. We couldn't do it worse if we tried. I promise you, you won't do it any worse than the federal government has. So use your own expertise, use your own background and regulation. Now, I do not favor the legalization of any of these drugs. I don't. But it's a question of concepts, a question of language. We hear these different words. Decriminalization, by the way, means, like in Holland or Portugal, that it's still illegal to buy, use, possess, sell any of these drugs. But as long as you stay within very well-known guidelines, the police are instructed, frequently in writing, not to enforce the law. Well, I'm a judge. I believe in having reasonable laws, and I believe in enforcing those laws, but at least what they're doing is far better than what we are doing. But if you're talking about the legalization of drugs, think aspirin. You know, aspirin is a legalized drug. You can advertise it on the open market. Your 12-year-old daughter can go to your local pharmacy and buy a case of it if she wants to. I don't want that to happen for marijuana or any of these other drugs. Alcohol, which is my drug of choice, no. So I believe in the strict regulation and control of these various drugs, kind of like tobacco, kind of like alcohol. I personally do not want marijuana or any other of these drugs, methamphetamines, whatever, to be advertised where children are going to glamorize them. I don't like that idea at all. By the way, are you familiar with this group called I have to put my hand over my heart, it's just so close and warming, this Partnership for a Drug-Free America? Do you know who the original sponsors were for the Partnership of a Drug-Free America? The alcohol industry and the tobacco industry. Drug-free indeed. But it's brilliant marketing because they did not want the competition from marijuana. So from a marketing standpoint, they're right on tune. As far as a policy standpoint, it's just diabolical. By the way, do you know who the main sponsor is today of the Partnership for a Drug-Free America? The pharmaceutical industry. Hey, what do you know? Okay, it's money, folks. It's just money. It's money that dictates what this policy is and has been. We're talking huge amounts of money. Soon after I started doing this, we actually had a conference at the Hoover Institute in Stanford University. Milton Friedman was there. Joe McNamara, former chief of police of Kansas City and San Jose, was there. And we had three different conferences and invited chiefs of police to come into this conference from around the country. And as soon as the doors were closed and the public microphones were turned off, even back in about 1994, half of them agreed pretty much with what we were saying. But then they'd look at us, and you need to know this, activists. They would say, I cannot say what I understand and have seen and believe because I have many masters. You know, I have to respond to the city, to the mayor. I have to respond to the city council. I have to respond to the various editorial boards of these local papers. And if I said what I understand, I'd lose my job. So I need political cover. That's where we come in. We have to regulate and control and legalize, as it were, the discussion. Because today there is still a prohibition on discussion. And I look back in my time as a judge. And there are still several opportunities in which I remember, hey, there was about four young men, as I understand it, as I recall, that were being sentenced for being under the influence of methamphetamines. In California, it was and still is a mandatory minimum sentence of 90 days in jail for being under the influence of a narcotic or methamphetamines. So they had to give me what we call a factual basis. They had to put into their own words why they were guilty of this offense. And all four, in various ways, said, Your Honor, my drug of choice is marijuana. And I'd buy my marijuana from the same person for years. However, one fine day, they sold me some marijuana laced with methamphetamines. I didn't know it. I smoked it and got hooked. And I keep thinking to myself, you wonder why I'm doing this? I keep thinking to myself, we all know that smoking cigarettes is hazard to your health, but at least when you go to your local mini-mart and buy a pack of Marlboros, you're going to know it's not laced with methamphetamines. This is a drug prohibition problem. So we have to get these words out. Look, when it comes down to it as well, it's a question of liberty. The criminal justice system is really good at holding people accountable for what they do, but they're not good at all, nor should they be, of controlling what we as adults put into our bodies. It makes as much sense to me to put this gifted actor, Robert Downey Jr., in jail for his heroin problem, and so far he's doing pretty well, but he will always have that craving. He's going to have to be careful. But it makes as much sense to me to put Robert Downey Jr. in jail for his heroin problem as it would have Betty Ford in jail for her alcohol problem. It's the same thing, isn't it? It's a medical problem. Bring them closer to medical professionals that can help them instead of labeling them automatic criminals and pushing them farther away. It's simply that question. So it's a question of liberty. It's a question of also doing what works. And it's also a question, by thunder, of getting the federal government and the governments themselves out of our personal lives. Out of our personal lives. They are encroaching upon our freedoms so much. Why? Well, I tell you, big government is really, really good and effective at least one thing, and that is increasing the size, the power, the funding of big government. And they're continuing to get more involved in our lives. The answer is no. The answer is no. What is the soul of the United States of America? There are still people from anywhere around the world that still love America. They still love Americans. They'd give an awful lot to be a part of America. They may not be all that proud and happy of our government. Then again, neither am I. But what makes us special? Why is it that so many people want to come here? And the answer is the soul of our country is our freedoms and our liberties. And today our very soul is under attack by our very own government. And it's up to us to stand up and say, no, this will not happen. I talk with various groups of immigrants, for example, from Russia, from Iraq, from Vietnam. And they look aghast at what is happening now in our country. They fled from governments that intrude. They have that knock on the door and searching without warrants and nighttime raids and people disappearing or being taken into custody without a warrant. And that's what I fled from to come to the United States. And now they look around and see that's where our government is going and no one is saying anything about it. I wrote a book, finally, just I'd gotten so much information that I had to with regard to the war on drugs. It's probably the longest book title you've ever heard of, Why Our Drug Laws Have Failed and What We Can Do About It, A Judicial Indictment of the War on Drugs. And I cited numbers of other judges, even back in 2001 when it was originally printed, commenting about the failed war on drugs. But I have an entire chapter of the erosion of our civil liberties, citing only United States Supreme Court cases involving drugs, how the erosion of our Fourth Amendment against search and seizure has been rampant in our country today. And it's so easy to give up our rights and so hard to get them back. The war on drugs is the biggest reason for our loss of civil liberties probably in our country's history, although the so-called war on terror is now giving that a run for its money as well. But the government emphasizes fear. They keep us in fear. And if you're going to have a war on drugs, that means you've got to vilify the enemy, don't you? And who is it? Oh, it's those hippies. Oh, it's those druggies. Now, I don't use the word hype. I don't use the word, down and out or any of the rest of this stuff. It vilifies people. People are human beings, and they have drug problems. My daughter is bipolar. She's going to turn 40 years old in December. And she told me a while ago that, Dad, the only time I really feel normal is when I'm using methamphetamines. And that's a true problem. It's a true addiction problem. And she's had some problems. She's doing fairly well now, but who knows. But so many other people are as well. Already in this conference, I've heard about three or four different couples, different people, talking about their family problems and exacerbated by the war on drugs. You may remember a fellow by the name of Jeb Bush, who was as governor of Florida. It was become pretty well known. Of course, he was a political figure, and he had two twin daughters that had, as it was publicly revealed, problems with regard to prescription drugs and addictions. And you know, he came out on the airwaves and said, this is a family emergency. We need treatment and we need privacy. And you know, my heart goes out to him, and he's right. He needed treatment and he needed privacy. But if it's us, we need treatment and we need privacy. But if it's them, they need prison. And guess who the them is? You know, mostly people of color, mostly the down and out, mostly the people of lower economic areas. And the answer is no, that does not what our country stands for. It does not take a sociologist to go through any jail or prison in our country and see that people of color are vastly overrepresented. The answer is no. We cannot do this. The United States of America leads the world in the incarceration of our people, both by sheer numbers as well as per capita. There's a guy named Jim Webb, who was a Democratic senator from Virginia, and he was seen on the cover of Parade magazine. He's worthy of applause. He was seen on the cover of Parade magazine saying, citing these statistics, and then with the great comment that either the United States of America is the most evil people in the world, or we're doing something wrong. What do you think it is? We need treatment. They need prison. So we need to come back to the fundamental approach of the criminal justice system, and that is hold people accountable for their actions. We're pretty good at that. However, if I were to be selling marijuana illegally, and you come to me with $20 in your hand, and I have a baggie of $20 worth of marijuana, I'm not going to turn you in. I'm not going to arrest you. I'm not going to call the police because you're doing what I want to. You're my customer, and you're not going to turn me in either. And so in order to break that bond, you've got to get down in the gutter if you're in the law enforcement business. In order to interfere between these voluntary transactions, you're going to have a wiretap, you're going to have an informant, you're going to have an undercover officer, and then that brings all kinds of problems. The government is not good at controlling what we as adults put into our bodies, nor should they be. It's none of their business. So we get back to that. Talk about Robert Downey Jr., Betty Ford, or whatever. Whatever they put into their body, bring them, if they're causing medical problems for themselves, and they could be, bring them closer to the medical professionals that can help them. But leave them alone otherwise, unless if Robert Downey Jr., Betty Ford, you or I drive a motor vehicle impaired by, you name it, marijuana, alcohol, my drug of choice, methamphetamines, whatever, that's a crime and should be. What's the difference? The answer is now, by my actions, I'm putting your safety at risk. Legitimate criminal justice function. But they have no business controlling what I, as an adult, put into my body. Now, I'm going to fly home tonight. I'm going to have dinner with my wife. And I could drink 10 martinis if I wanted to. Clearly not medically a smart thing to do. Certainly medically harmful. But not a violation of law, nor should it be. So let's get this word out. Marijuana is a viable medicine. Marijuana is a viable recreational drug, and it is used responsibly by virtually everybody. And if they're used irresponsibly to the detriment of other people, bring in the criminal justice system. But otherwise, get out of our lives. No such thing as a lowly activist. And there are just so many other issues as well. I was proud, as Anthony said, to be the vice presidential nominee, vice presidential candidate in 2012. I believed in Governor Gary Johnson, who, you know, I'd been doing this for a while, never heard of him. He was a two-term Republican governor of New Mexico. And I opened up my newspaper in 1999 and found that, hey, who is this governor of New Mexico? He says he has conducted what he called his own audit and determined that the war on drugs is not working and we've got to put our heads together and change it. I thought, wow, he had no political constituency for that, no political benefit. In fact, he took on a whole lot of political problems. He did the right thing for the right reason. So as soon as he started running for president, I started saying, you know, he's the most qualified person to be president I know of. I guess I said it a few too many times, so he asked me to be his running mate, so now what am I going to do? But I just believed in that. We need to bring in responsibility at all levels of our society, and that starts with government. Responsibility movement is what we need to get back to at all levels. Personal, of course. Corporate, absolutely. Government, certainly so. And we need to do this, and we need to do it right away. We're going in the wrong direction in so many areas. You know, our children, look, you can go into a barrio or an area, and people will understand, basically, that there are only so many Michael Jordans, only so many Kobe Bryants or whatever. So my chances of going into the NBA or the NFL, realistically, are not that good. So we might as well take out billboards for our young people. Hey, you want to make some money? You will never, ever make as much money in your life as you can by selling drugs. We are misleading our youth completely. Gangs, I've seen this in juvenile court. Juvenile street gangs use this as a recruiting tool. Hey, you want to make some money? Join our gang and help be involved to sell drugs. We will cripple really bad organizations by regulating and controlling these various drugs. You know, one of the biggest purveyors, suppliers of methamphetamines are the Hells Angels. Oh, what a nice group. Personally, you may not remember this. It was about 15, 20 years ago that the government of Korea had a ship that they were sending to the West, and it was filled with methamphetamines, and we found it and were able to intercept that shipment. But it so happens, at least in my belief, the sale of illegal drugs funded their whole nuclear policy. It's huge money. So the drugs are here to stay. Tell people that. You know, we've tried to make them illegal, but there's never been any people that have not had some form of mind-altering, sometimes addicting substances to use, to misuse, to abuse, and maybe even get addicted to, except maybe the Eskimo, because they couldn't grow anything, but now chemistry has changed that as well. So I bring you bad tidings. We've tried to make them illegal. They've always been with us, and they always will. And that means they're going to bring in harms without question. So let's adopt a policy that is to reduce the harms that can and will be caused by these drugs in our communities. And then you start looking at the drug money. You start looking at going into Mexico and these beheadings. Once again, it's not caused with drugs. It doesn't have anything to do with drugs. It's all drug money. And as a practical reality, we could bulldoze the entire country of Colombia, Peru. You can take Mexico with it if you want to. It won't make any difference at all with regard to our illegal drug problems here. Why? Because the reality is, if the demand is here, the demand will be met. If you figuratively have somebody standing on a street corner with a $20 bill in his hand saying, hey, give me $20 of cocaine or marijuana or whatever, somebody will fill that market. And if it's not done by Colombia, Peru, and Mexico, it'll be done by Nigeria or Afghanistan. Or, by the way, California. Do you know what the largest cash crop is today in the state of California? It's marijuana. Number two is grapes, okay? So you realize, hey, if you have this out there, somebody is using it. And we have really harmed ourselves by keeping marijuana illegal. I am completely convinced. I've never smoked marijuana, like we said. I'm completely convinced that medical marijuana is a viable medicine, and it's increasingly being proved. I was one time in Marin County, it's north of San Francisco in California, and was at a medical marijuana clinic, and arbitrarily went up to some young man who was in line for his, as he called it, his medicine. And I introduced myself and said, well, what is your story? Why are you here? He said, well, Your Honor, about 9 months ago, I was involved in a motorcycle collision and did real violence to my spine. So my medical doctor had me so pumped full of narcotics, I was in a haze, I basically couldn't function, and I was having about 5 or 6 seizures a day. That went on for several months until a friend of mine said, try medical marijuana. He said, what do I have to lose? So he did. And since that time, he has weaned himself off all of the narcotics. He's able to live pretty much a normal life, and he maybe has 1 or 2 seizures a week. I think to myself, wow, what are we doing here? So the whole medical marijuana field, and honestly, CBD oil is going to be a medical revolution in our country, I really believe. It will be. Get the word out. And hemp, for heaven's sake. You know, you can make a difference between marijuana and hemp just by definition. You know, let's say a THC of, 0.3% or less is hemp. Treat it like cotton. And I was on a radio talk show, this is quite a few years ago, out of Iowa, and a farmer came on and said, well, Judge Gray, we're talking about ethanol, and I'm going to talk against my own economic self-interest because I raise corn. However, you can get more ethanol from an acre of hemp than you can an acre of corn, and the hemp will not clog your carburetor, but the corn will. I thought, you know, that's not my field, but the market will figure this out. Why do we have the federal government dictating that, yes, we have to use ethanol in the first place, and it must be used with corn? You know, why? Well, crony capitalism. That's the idea. You have a whole lot of agricultural folks in Iowa, Illinois, or Indiana, or wherever, that want to get this extra market for their crops, which, by the way, has the cost of raising the cost of tortillas and all the rest. Get the government out of this. So another secret, we have so much money in government today, don't we? With all of these lobbyists and all of this stuff, and we always will, until you will never get money out of government until you get government out of money. Get the government out of these organizations and you won't have these lobbyists. The big one, of course, is taxes. You know, you look at the complications of this tax system. If we were to go to a flat tax, one that was understandable, simple, straightforward, what would happen? Well, you would lose all these lobbyists because they'd have nowhere to go. If you want to get rid of lobbyists, go to a flat tax, and that'll take care of about 60% of the lobbyists in Washington already. So there's several groups against simplifying our tax system. Who are they? Well, H&R Block is not interested. You know, the tax attorneys, accountants and stuff, they're not. I understand that's our system and that's fine. Others are the people that work for the IRS. Okay, I think we can live with that. But the major powerful group that is against this change is members of Congress. Why? Because today they get enormous political power by voting for tax breaks for their wealthy constituents and they do not want to give it up. Again, government keeps getting bigger and bigger. You get money out of government by getting government out of money. So these are all things that we can do. Their help is on the way. You need to be revitalized. It's really fun to be able to speak with good activist people. And I am here to tell you that some of the best people I've ever met in my life, I have met because of my involvement in drug policy reform. Some of them have been to prison. Some of them are still drug addicted. Others are like me that don't use any of these illegal substances, et cetera. But it's really amazing. Yes, I even speak for LEAP, which is Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. And one of the people that actually I helped bring in is the former chief deputy of the Los Angeles Police Department. Not exactly any man's liberal, okay? He's got all the badges and all the guns and everything else. But, you know, from that perspective, nobody can argue with Steve Downing. I mean, he's done there. He's not a liberal. He's not coddling anybody. He just realizes what we're doing isn't working. And so it's been amazing to see. I wouldn't be here speaking with you folks except for my involvement in drug policy reform. It's just an amazing thing. It's a very exciting thing. It's going to be a revolution in our country to get the government out of our lives in this fashion, get the government out of that money, regulate and control these various drugs according to however each state decides how this should happen. I'm going to tell you another couple of stories. I was in juvenile court for a while on the abused and neglected children calendar. And maybe every 5 weeks or so, I would have the following factual scenario come into my court. There'd be a mother, single mother, let's say, of two children, and she'd make a big mistake. Namely, she'd hook up with the wrong boyfriend. And so the boyfriend was out there selling drugs, and she'd basically know it, but that's the way the cards were dealt. So one fine day, he would come to her and say, well, tell you what, Helen, if you'll take this package across town and give it to Charlie, I'll pay you $500 or so. And so she'd think, well, it probably is narcotics, but, you know, I'm going that way anyway, and I could use this for half my month's rent. So she would do it. Okay, so she gets arrested, charged, convicted, and sentenced to, say, 5 years in prison. And unfortunately, in today's world, 5 years in prison for transporting 3 or 4 ounces of heroin is probably not an unrealistic charge. So let me ask you a question. When you incarcerate the mother, what happens to her children? And the answer to that question is easy. She has legally abandoned her children because she's off in prison. So they come to me on the abused and neglected children calendar. So now I have the mother, and she's sitting there in handcuffs and in a jail jumpsuit. And I look at her and tell her the truth, which is, of course, ma'am, you know you're not going to be a functional part of your children's lives for the next 5 years. She starts to well up with tears. Wouldn't you? And then I look at her and tell her the brutal truth, which is, unless you're really lucky and either have a personal friend or family member that's both willing and able to take custody of your children, they're probably going to be adopted by somebody else by the time you get out of prison. And she starts to dissolve in tears. Wouldn't you? But unfortunately, in my county of Orange, there are a lot of people that don't get interested in those human problems for whatever reason. But if you're a taxpayer, I can make you dissolve in tears as well. Because you know what we're going to be spending for the next year? It's about $5,000 a month to keep each child in a group home. So you have two children, that's $5,000 a month for one, $60,000 a year for one, $120,000 of taxpayer money, plus another $30,000 to keep the mother incarcerated. We're going to be spending $150,000 of our tax money simply to separate a mother from her children. And it all has to be run by me. I don't have to do it quietly, and that's what you do, but it's just an outrage. Why are we doing this? And the answer is, we're not active enough. Let's put an end to this war on drugs. It's the most important thing that we as caring citizens can do in our country, and we need to do it better and faster. And it's true. And we can, and we are, but the faster the better. So I want to leave time for questions. There's so much to talk about, and I want to talk about what you want to talk about, and thank you for your involvement. By the way, it's really exciting. I am now on the board of directors for something called Cannabis Sativa Incorporated. Governor Gary Johnson is the CEO, actually, and we are involved in cannabis as well. Never thought I would be, but it's an exciting opportunity, and it's going to be out there, and like you're hearing from Alex, people are going to make a whole lot of money at this. But I'm going to leave you with a quick story, and that is that there was a man on his deathbed. At the very end of his life, he called his wife to his side and said, "Well, dear, I know I'm not long for this earth, but before I leave you, I just have to get something off my chest. That for a number of years now, I've been having an affair with such and such a woman that lives across the street. And I don't mean to hurt your feelings, but I think you had a right to hear this and hear it from me." She looked at him. She thought for a moment. Then she said, "That's okay. I know. That's why I poisoned you." Well, in such a similar way, we are poisoning ourselves by our choice of drug policy. We couldn't do it worse if we tried. We are harming our youth. We are harming people that are mentally disabled. By the way, I expect I know the answer in Portland also, but in Los Angeles and Orange County, where I'm from, you know what the largest mental illness, mental health facilities are, so-called, in our counties? They're the county jail. You can imagine how much harm we are doing to these mentally fragile people. We couldn't do it worse if we tried. We are poisoning ourselves by this choice of our drug policy. It's got to change. It will change, by thunder. We're going to get this done. Thank you for the invitation. Thank you for being here. And let's get this thing done. Thank you all.
Judge Jim Gray, one more time. Let's hear it for Judge Jim Gray.